Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thank you for listening to this podcast of Real Recovery. There are many more podcasts available at myfaithradio.com. Your support makes this possible. Thank you.
Help, I need somebody. Help, not just anybody. Help, you know I need someone. Help. When I was young, was so much.
Hello and welcome to Real Recovery. Bill Arnold on this side of the studio and at his home studio facing the lake. George P. Fraser. Hello, George.
Billy, how we doing?
Good. Do you actually face the lake when you talk to me?
I do.
Oh, good. Well, welcome to the show, George. We're going to have an interesting show tonight. Thanks to our old producer, Alex Whitworth, who was with us for years, as we are coming up on our 10th anniversary, George. It's going to be exciting. We called Alex and said, Alex, put together a bunch of clips for us. And he did. He did a great job. And he's over at Minnesota Adult and Teen Challenge. And it seems like recently, maybe because it's COVID and everything else, there's a lot of people looking for places to go for treatment. And even people have suggested to us, do we have a treatment center? And could you imagine you and me being in charge of anything?
No. And I think we should clarify that Alex is working at Minnesota and Adult Teen Challenge.
He is indeed, yes.
Which is interesting. He goes from producing his show on recovery to working at Minnesota Adult and Teen Challenge.
Yeah.
Kind of cool.
Yeah, it's very cool. And Minnesota Adult and Teen Challenge is a great place, and they do great work there. And we're big fans of them. And if you are thinking of recovery and you need to be in a place where you can get treatment, that's a wonderful place to consider. You can go right over to their website and check them out. But, George, so we've got a bunch of testimonies from some clients over there, and it's going to be a wonderful show to hear some powerful testimonies. They're shorter clips, but we're going to hear from a number of people tonight. But I also want to say before we jump in, I always want to do a step because we talk about how important it is to do step work. And I don't think our audience wants us to proceed without you mentioning a step and talking about it.
Okay. Well, I was thinking we could go with step two. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. And the reason, Billy, I wanted to talk about that, this step, is we kind of blow past that a lot in recovery, that it's a given. But I want to step back and look in the rearview mirror of the process of coming to believe in God. In that, a lot of times when we work with guys, Bill, they tell us, I feel that God doesn't want me using anymore. You've heard that many times.
Oh, yeah.
Well, where did that come from? And I always try to tell guys, that came to you from God. He's pulling you. You didn't decide one day that it's a good idea to quit. Most of us who are addicted know for years we have a problem. And I think looking back in the rearview mirror, we can see that God did for us what we could not do and didn't want to do for ourselves. And Bill, I don't know about you, but when I think about God's for me, well, who can really be against me? And when we have struggling times like we do now with the COVID, where maybe you can't get out and meet your community, maybe you're Zooming it like I am, maybe you're spending a lot of time alone, even more than I normally used to. you've got to really dig deep some days, fair? And I think knowing that God's got me and he always had me eliminates that I wonder if God's really there for me today. He's the same today, yesterday, and forever. And for me, Bill, to look back, and I think for most people that go, I came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity, which is living and believing in the truth. Insanity is living and acting upon lies. That God always had us, and he still does. That helps me a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, George, I would love to get on with one of our first testimonies. Of course, these were compiled by our friend and former producer, Alex Whitworth, over at Minnesota Adult and Teen Challenge, and he put together some clips of some graduates who have got powerful stories to tell. Our first one we're going to hear tonight is from Raquel.
The first time I had really experienced grief and loss or losing someone close to me, I didn't know how to handle it, and it it knocked me down hard and consumed me. And I dove to the bottom of every bottle after that every day. And I'd stopped working. I was home every day. And I was drinking 24 hours around the clock. And in order to sleep, I needed to drink myself to sleep. And it was more of just a state of being unconscious than sleeping. And I would be at the liquor store, honestly, at least 5 times a day. And I would be there 8 in the morning on the dot. I was there before the people that worked there. And I had never felt dependence like that, like needing that alcohol. And it pushed me to do things I never, ever thought I would do. I never thought I would be that person. And I thought, I got this under control. And I would drink all hours of the day, every day, just to be okay and paste a smile on my face for people and try and survive. I think it was obvious that I didn't have it together. That's one of the things that really scared me about myself, is how well I'd grown was able to manipulate people. It really scared me, and I didn't like who I was anymore. I didn't like myself for quite a while now. But when I would go, I had 3 different liquor stores I was a regular at and that I would hit throughout the day. I would sometimes go to one more than once. But I think just when you fake it so well, and there's so many addicts just under the covers, like no one notices or sees, because we become so good at just appearing like we have it all together and just trying to survive every day. And so when I would walk in and appearing to be in a great mood, I'm young, I'm only 24, they would never think this girl is killing over 1 liter of liquor plus beer a day. My dad realized first that I was drinking a lot, and he could tell. My grandfather that died, he was an alcoholic as well, but he had like over 30 years of sobriety, which was awesome. But my dad came to the point where he's like, you're going to have to leave if you don't go back to Teen Challenge. And so it was kind of that ultimatum point. I distinctly remember this time coming in, because I knew I was coming in this time. I knew I hadn't drank at all. I was going to pass. Like I was coming in. And this was it. And I had tried, getting in here before, but I would self-sabotage it. And so it was hard for my parents, because they're like, when is she finally going to, take that step? And so my dad brought me this time, and I went in, I passed my breathalyzer, took my drug test or whatever, and they're like, all right, you want to go, grab your stuff from the car? And so I told my dad, I was like, all right, we can go get my stuff. And the look on his face is just relief. Like, I can't imagine how relieved he was to know that almost like it's over. Like, I can just entrust, and the trust that they have in the Lord is incredible. But yeah, immense relief in his face. And I brought my stuff in, and I turned and looked at him, and he was holding back tears, I think, and I gave him the biggest hug, and that's when I knew. I was like, this is it. It's not gonna be the same now. Like, here we go, kind of deal. And so then I turned around and walked through these doors, and here I am. So he's so proud of me. I see my parents usually every week. They come and visit me all the time, and they are so happy. I thank Jesus every day for my family. I am so blessed to have my parents and my brother, and their support has been so incredible throughout this whole walk. Christ has saved my life through this program. I am so, how grateful I am for Teen Challenge. It's hard to even express. And you need the relationship with the Lord in order for this to work, at least for me. I can't do this without the Lord. And what's so awesome is when you walk in these doors, the staff that's here reflect the love of Christ on all these clients in such an amazing way. And you can just see it in their faces, like some unconditional love that they may have never experienced before, they're experiencing through the staff here. And it's so cool to see. And that's why people stay. That's why this program works, is because of the staff, because of how they teach us and how everything is set up. It shows the love of Christ, and it gives people hope, and they want to keep going and keep working for it. Now that I've come to Teen Challenge, I look at my future and I am so excited, and I have so much hope and renewed strength. God's created a new heart in me and renewed a loyal spirit, and I can't be more grateful.
That's quite a story, George. Raquel, fortunately, got into treatment. She's got her whole life ahead of her, and it's encouraging to hear that the Lord met her where she needed to be met.
Yeah, a couple things jumped out to me, Bill, and I'd like to talk about them.
Yeah, well, we'll do that after the break. I think there's a number of other testimonies we have coming up as well that we can talk about as coming up in the next 45 minutes. You're listening to Real Recovery with Bill and George. Thanks so much for being with us tonight. After a short break and some cool music, we'll be right back. Real Recovery is live and on the air. Something like that. That's what we're going with anyway. George, we heard a powerful story from Raquel. She started drinking at a young age and masked what she was doing, tried to create that she was A-OK. I've heard that before.
Yeah, and one of the things that jumped out to me was she sounded like she had gone to Teen Challenge before. And then she went back. And I think whenever that happens, the person who goes back found something while they were there that helped them, the mm-hmm. community, the program, whatever. So whenever somebody goes back to a place where they went to and they didn't stay sober, I think, gosh, that's a real testament to the place. You mm-hmm. know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
And the other thing is, I hear from people a lot who listen to our show that say, gosh, it's not working that way for me. I didn't get it right away and find Jesus and everything was wonderful. Well, most of the time we take stops and improve a little bit each time, Bill.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not easy. It is a lot of work. It's worth it. But you got to pick up your cross and deny yourself daily. And addicts, we're not good at denying ourselves. We want pleasure, fun, escape, excitement. And so when somebody, you know, opens up and says, hey, I did this before, and it's not that it didn't work, but we get recovery in pieces a lot of the time.
Mm.
So if you're listening tonight and it's not all wonderful, keep trying. Repent if you went back to using. Ask God to help you. Get back on the program and walk it out with faith and fear and trembling.
Because all the progress you made in your sobriety counts for a lot, doesn't it, George?
Yeah, we don't lose sober time, Bill. But we are going to have setbacks. Not that it's ever appropriate for us to use a mood-altering chemical that's not medically prescribed, but we stumble and we repent, we get back on, and it's not easy to do. And sometimes people can listen to other people that are in recovery and they're all happy and that. I wasn't for a year and a half in my recovery. I wasn't happy at all.
Mm-hmm.
It was a lot of work. And what we're talking about is delayed gratification. And I think a lot of the Christian life is that, Bill. It won't be till we get to heaven till everything's really fabulous.
Mm.
And it's tough. And don't forget that. And that's something we don't do. We want instant gratification.
One of the things I appreciated about Raquel's story was that tender moment between her and her dad as she was going back into Teen Challenge, and Dad was quite relieved that she was there, going to be in a safe environment where she wouldn't be using and she'd get back on her recovery track. That was a tender moment.
It was great. And I'm sure that not having to worry about somebody you really care and love for is fabulous.
Yeah, yeah. George, we have another number of clips that we've got tonight. Compliments of Alex over at Minnesota Adult and Teen Challenge. So let's hear from Roland.
I was born, when I was born, my mom was incarcerated in the Shakopee Women's Prison for drugs. And from there, from the day after I was born, I went to go live with some family of mine, my great-grandmother. I got passed around from family member to family member. And growing up in South Minneapolis in the 90s, it was, my family was filled with drugs and violence and gangbanging and the whole dope lifestyle. So I got conditioned to thinking that that was all right. And I grew up that was life. And that kind of limited myself. And that painted a picture for me that this is what life's going to be. This is what it is. So find my place within that life. Because I was passed around from family member to family member, I never really felt a sense of belonging or a sense of love or what real love was or what it was like to have a home. But I found that quick within drugs. I started smoking weed and doing X pills. And with that came a sense of family from the people I was around or the people I was selling drugs to. Every day I had to pick who my family was. I got to have people play the part that I wanted to in my life. Like, all right, this is going to be like my brother or my sister. And it kept escalating, you know, more and more because I wanted to be in the streets and I wanted people to know my name so they would respect me and they would love me and do all this. Or everywhere I go, people would know who I was. And just because there was things missing inside me, I didn't know what was there. I didn't know what it was. And I would get so lost in the drugs that I would have to commit crimes to go get more drugs to sell or to even it out. And among that, I wasn't even a good drug dealer because I kept going to jail over and over again. And I've accumulated probably about 7 years total in between prison and jails. I got so used to and conditioned to going in and out that I would get in trouble, I would go to jail, and it would just be a ticking time till I got out and did it all over again. It was just a timeout, and I was so used to it that it didn't bother me. It was time for me to sober up, and I do my time and leave and get out and be worse than before. Every time it elevated, it got worse, and it became a revolving door. So fast forward a little bit. Last year, about July, I got arrested for fleeing an officer, second-degree possession, third-degree burglary, and fifth-degree possession. And with my points in the criminal history that I have, it was supposed to be an automatic, like, 111 months in prison. I went to court, and I went and told the judge, I was like, look, just make everyone's job easier, you know, just give me 90 months and save you the hassle. I get out, let's go, this is what it is. I was so stuck and lost in my mind that that was cool, that was all right with me. It was, well, it turns out that the judge and God had a conversation that I wasn't involved in, because he came back to me, he was like, you know what, this isn't working, you've done 7 years altogether. It's not working, you know. What are your thoughts on Teen Challenge? So when I got to Teen Challenge, as soon as I got there, I planned on leaving. I was like, look, I don't want to be here. I was just in prison a week ago, or in jail a week ago, and I had the mindset of I'm going to prison for 10 years. So now having that mindset for one day, and then a week later, I'm in Teen Challenge with a bunch of nice people. I'm like, oh no, I got to get out of here. You know, I'm like, mentally, I was prepared to be around criminals and murderers. And coming to Teen Challenge, it was everything got turned upside down. I just stuck it out. I was like, all right, I'll see where this is going. But Teen Challenge pulled up alongside me, and I seen staff members that I knew from, you know, running around the streets, and it was cool. They had a sense of joy and they had a sense of peace, and they weren't strung out on dope, and they looked healthy, and they're coming to check on me and, you know, making sure I have clothes and making sure I ate and, you know, just making it, asking me how I'm doing and all this stuff. And I didn't know what to think of it. I got on the defensive and was trying to find everybody's angle. Like, what's your angle? What's the payout here? Like, so I was like, all right, well, if I've seen you in prison and you're here now checking on me and everybody else I don't know what it is. I want to find out what that is, because everyone's in on something I'm not. So I'm going to find out what it is. The more I start digging in and learning everything I thought I was, that's not what God intended for me to be. I can be a better person. I can be a better father. I can be a better son. I can do something to change the world if I just allow God to work through me and, you know, and build that relationship. It's a beautiful thing, you know, to understand that someone died for me. Someone didn't just see me as a kid that was born in prison and sold drugs and overdosed and did meth and heroin and Xanax and robbed and cheated and steal and did years in prison. And Jesus doesn't see me like that. He sees me for his son, for his child. He sees me as someone that can stand up and do something good for the world, for my family, and lead and not be a follower, but be a leader. And once that's unlocked and I got a taste of that, it's like, okay, now I'm not going to let anything get in the way of me and God. I'm not going to let anything get in the way of me and my relationship with Christ.
George, I love stories of redemption, and that's quite a story.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Tough start.
Tough start.
Really went through a lot. And going to be interesting to track him, Bill. Sounds like he's got quite a future going.
Yeah, and he has met the living Jesus, and he now knows that he is of great value and worth, and that's not what he grew up necessarily thinking. I know I'm sure his great-grandma and his family loved on him, but when you're searching for your identity and you're doing it in the streets, that's a history that's going to always be knocking at the door a little bit, I would guess.
Yeah, it's always interesting to me, and you've met guys too. They're willing to do the time. There is no way I'm doing time. They're not taking me alive, Bill.
No,
come
that's
on.
For sure.
And for me, that was a great deterrent to get sober, and I know it is for many people. God had to really crash through that for him. Because if you're looking at 10, 11 years, and let's just get it on here, let's do it, Mr. Judge. I'm sure they really enjoy being told what to do by a defendant. I learned that the hard way.
Yeah, I know.
And then God cracks through that, and it's a different outlook. It's a totally game changer on everything.
Yeah, everything. And when God's grace breaks into your life like it did with Roland, it is such an amazing opportunity for him to see light and life. And you start to realize that the fellowship and community that you're in is life-giving and nurturing, and it's not anything that he has been used to. So it became part of his recovery because he felt community. How important is it to be in community, George?
Well, it depends on who the community is, Bill, but most of the time it's real important. What I think here is, he came to believe that a power greater than himself could restore him to sanity. And what we get to hear is that God restored him to truthful and correct thinking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Amen, George. All right. We're going to take a little break. You're listening to Real Recovery with Bill and George. We've got some wonderful clips tonight. Compliments of our friend Alex over at Minnesota Adult and Teen Challenge, a wonderful place to go if you're looking for a place to get recovery from an addiction. We'll take a short break and we'll be right back. We're back with Real Recovery, Bill and George. We are so glad to be with you tonight. If you are hearing some of these powerful testimonies and it sounds familiar with what's going on in your life or the life of a loved one, make sure you take action. Make sure you pray for that person and maybe get them to a recovery facility, a place where they can go and get free from their addiction. And Minnesota Adult and Teen Challenge is a great place. George, I know that there's some great facilities in the Twin Cities, and there's Hazleton, there's all kinds of places, but Minnesota Adult and Teen Challenge is a place kind of near and dear to my heart.
Yeah, we're very lucky, Bill, to live in a state where there's so much good recovery opportunities, and Teen Challenge does a great job as well. And the other thing is, God, if you follow God's leading, you'll make the right choice of where you go.
Mm-hmm.
But you've got to commit wherever you go to do what you're asked to do, because no program works if you don't do it the way it's laid out.
Mm-hmm. George, is it safe to say that that first 24 hours is going to be maybe some of your most critical time in recovery, those first 24, 48 hours? Because when I was listening to Roland talk, and the minute he said, the minute I got there, I was going to leave.
Oh, yeah. I think if he was, you know, if we asked him a couple of questions, he's probably thinking about bailing out at a red light on the way to the place, you know?
Yeah, good point.
And you don't know what it's like. And we're talking tonight about living and acting on the truth. Some of the thoughts that come into your head aren't based on the truth, you know, to where I'd rather go to jail than a rehab center. So, yeah, the first 24 and then only every 24 after that is critical, Bill.
Yeah, good point. It's 24 hours at a time.
Yeah, and a lot of people think they've got what they need before the program is over. I think for a lot of us, it's the first time in our lives that we did things the way they were laid out.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that's common to addicts is something will be presented to us and we think, I got a better way of doing that. I'm going to do it my way. And that's actually what gets us into rehab in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that doesn't usually work out well. You want to do things on your terms, and usually you have to not do things on your terms if you want a different result.
Yeah, it never worked out. Never worked out for me. But you know what? The next time's going to be different.
You got that
this
right,
time,
George.
It will work out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think we've got another clip we can listen. Our guest on this clip, her name is Kathy, and here it is.
I started drinking when I was about 21, and once I started, I couldn't stop. And that pretty much explains my alcohol use through the rest of my life. If I have one, my stoplight's off, and it doesn't matter where I am or what I'm doing. If I have responsibilities, I will drink. I will drink until the only thing that stops me is a blackout or pass out. I just had no concept of a life without alcohol. I went in for a checkup. I had been bleeding. And after two checks to make sure the reading was verified, my hemoglobin was like 0.3. If you don't know, 0.12 is normal. So there was no reason that I was alive, and I was taken to the hospital, and I was so into my addiction. My first thought is, well, I have to drive home and get somebody to drive me to the hospital. Meanwhile, I'll pack up my pockets with cigarettes and booze, which I did. And that's how I went to the hospital, and I stayed there a very long time. I was extremely ill. One of the most horrible things that happened as a direct result of my drinking is I had graduated from a treatment center, and I was actually going over to visit a friend that I had met there. And I had already started back drinking, and so I held off on drinking. I'd been to the liquor store. I had my pint and waited till I was coming back home. I had my two children with me. My sons were 3.5 and 9 months old. They were in their children's seats. But I couldn't wait to get home, and I started drinking straight whiskey in the car, driving with my babies in the back. And all I remember of that incident is what stopped me is I hit a car. And what happened is I had run a red light during rush hour traffic. And no one was killed. My children were okay. I remember absolutely none of it. That's just from the police report. What I remember is coming to and looking out the window, and I saw a police officer and my father, and the engine was in my lap. That was a very low time in my life. I had some time of sobriety, and I went back to drinking, and for me, that was just like suicidal drinking, because I already knew. There was nothing you could tell me about alcoholism I didn't know. And same thing. One drink and I'm in it. Lost all the jobs I had had. Was spending time in the hospital. I spent one time in a rehabilitation home for senior citizens, people that were minimum 70, mostly 80-year-old people, and here I am being rehabilitated. Got out and just continued, and I became homeless, and it's like, this is crazy. I tried sober homes. I got kicked out of there because I'd already started drinking. I felt so low and hated myself so bad. Here I am walking on the street with my stuff. I frankly have had everything a person ever wanted in the world. And here I am with a bag walking around in the dark, and it's raining and it's freezing cold. And I just said, okay, that's it. And I came to Teen Challenge, and I came to the door in the early morning, and they let me come in. And they said, we love you. It's okay. We love you. This happens. And I'm like, nope. You know, I truly hated myself. And it was through days of people literally saying all the time, I'm glad to see you. You can do it. You know, talk to me. Offered me help. Offered me an ear to talk to. And I wasn't treated like a garbage can, which is how I felt about myself. So I let people be good to me instead of listening to my own self, and it changed. I am not the same person that walked in. I should have been dead. It's all I can say is God wants me here for a reason. He's not done with me yet, because there's not much I've done to have kept myself living during those years. There's nothing I could do. And God, spirituality, and Jesus are absolutely necessary for sobriety. Without, you cannot and will not make it. I can't stay sober. With God, I can. And that's putting God in the driver's seat, not me. It's not, you know, I'm going to do this. No, it's, gee, what should I do? Help. And it's a matter of me practicing just letting go. And that's what letting go is just saying, here, God, take it. And it sounds crazy, but it works. I feel extremely hopeful and looking forward to success. And I feel just wonderful. It's it is a new life. It's gone with the old life, and this is new.
George, I'm going to give you the opening comments of Kathy's of her story.
That was fabulous. It really spoke to me on a couple levels, Bill. And number one, when she's talking about driving with her babies, as she said, in the back, in their seats, she obviously cares and loves for her kids. And she would never put them in danger willingly, except in a state of active addiction, alcoholism. And the delusion, the disconnect from reality is so strong that people, when we're lost and we're alone, because you're not connecting with God, you're not connecting with other people, you're not connecting with life. I'm going to pack cigarettes and a pint in my pockets so I can go to the hospital and do it. Your number one priority is getting it, using it, recovering from it, getting it. Total loss of control. And what a great story that God intervened. And she holds on to that scene of the officer, her father, and the engine in her lap.
Mm-hmm. That's brutal.
And I can feel that when I hear that. And one of the things for me, when I look back and when I talk to other people in recovery, the time of desolation, of walking a desert life with no other people in it because you can't connect to them, and the self-hatred that you hate what you're doing, who you are, and what you've done, and there's no way out. Her talking about walking in the dark, in the rain, with a bag. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, that was very, very hard to hear.
and then finding a place to go, knowing where to go. That came from God. Come on in. We love you. We help you. We'll take care of you.
Wasn't that tender, that we love you? And she said, no, you can't. I mean, she didn't know how that was even possible. But that's the love of the Lord.
It's the prodigal son.
Yeah.
It's that story. You know, when his father saw him a long way away, he ran to him. It's my son who was dead, and now he's alive. And that's what happens every time we get saved to somebody and when they get sober. It's a dead person taken alive. The only way to resurrect a dead person is by the living God through Jesus. And I never get tired of hearing about it and seeing it, Bill.
Yeah, I don't either, George. And I love the fact she said, I can't stay sober without the Lord. And I think that's true for most people. I know you know some people who don't have the Lord as their highest power that have remained sober, but for the most part, it's pretty impossible to be sober without the Lord.
I got a thought on that, Bill. I believe it's the general providence that's offered whether you believe or not.
Yeah,
that's the only way non-believers could get it.
I agree, George. I think you're absolutely spot on, when I don't say that very often about you. So anyway,
You've ever said it to me, Bill.
Well, maybe I'll take it back. Let's take a break, and we'll come back, and I'll decide if I want to stick with that comment. You're listening to Real Recovery. Bill and George, we'll be right back. Recovery is back with Bill and George. We've got a bunch of amazing stories that have come tonight from our good friend Alex Whitworth over at Minnesota Adult and Teen Challenge. And he has put together quite a number of testimonies that are quite powerful. The last one we heard, George, Kathy, is a story that was very hard to hear, but I'm so glad that God has reached in and touched her life in a transformational way.
Yeah, absolutely. That really touched me.
So we've got a couple clips left. They're shorter clips, but let's get to one of them. This one is a gentleman named Steve.
I drank for 47 years, and it was a problem right from the age of 14. I'm 62 now. I was an overnight manager at a Speedway gas station and convenience store, and I decided against my better judgment that it would be more fun to break up the boredom on the overnight by drinking. And the only problem is I drank way too much and ended up with a customer coming in, and I couldn't even get up off the floor. So he called the police. And an ambulance came and took me. I ended up going to detox and then into a psych ward for close to a month. The worst that it got that I can really picture is that one Saturday afternoon, I decided to walk to the liquor store. And on the way back, I bought a gallon of vodka in a big glass bottle. And on the way back home, I was taking drinks out of it on an empty stomach and ended up tripping on a crack in the sidewalk and going down, and I had that gallon bottle stashed inside my jacket, my coat, and the bottle broke and put glass shards all over on my chest, and I don't know how I would have made it home except somebody saw me fall on the sidewalk, pulled their car over, jumped out, helped me get up, and said he knew that I was drunk because there was vodka all over the place, and he said, "Can you point to where you need to go?" And I pointed at this house, couple houses away, and He helped me get in there and get in through the door and laid down on the couch, and he left without even saying a word. So he was like the Good Samaritan. Then my son came home, and all he did was look at me, and I was picking glass out of my chest and stomach and elbows, knees, and he said, "Dad, this has to stop." You know, Jesus has saved me from a life of condemnation, and I know that without him, I am nothing. You know, he's the vine, and I'm a branch, and without him, I am nothing, and I absolutely will not get sober and stay sober and live the kind of life that Christ wants me to live, the Christ-likeness, without him.
George, it's never too late, is it?
Never. And if you hear that thought in your head that now you've done it, this time you can't turn it around, God doesn't love you anymore, that's not from God, that's from the enemy.
Yeah, it's a powerful story. I mean, that's a lot of years of drinking, and hard to imagine that history. But Steve, you know, came, was prompted by his son saying, "Dad, you just can't do this anymore." And incredible what God's done in his life.
You know, real interesting that somebody would show up, an angel, I think, and a person, obviously, that just point me where you need to go. No questions, no lectures, just takes care of them.
Yeah, that was an amazing part of his story for sure. So we've got one more testimony we've got to listen to, and I think it might be a good time to play it now, and then we can chat about this story and then wrap up the show. This last clip is, again, comes to us compliments of our friends over at Minnesota Adult and Teen Challenge, and this gentleman's name is Trevor.
An issue to me until later on in my life. I mean, I obviously was drinking, but it really started affecting me when I was finally engaged and ready to slow down, and the alcohol wasn't. I was deeply in love with the person. I just couldn't stop drinking alcohol. She looked at me one day and said, "Every time you drink, I feel like you're cheating on me with somebody else." And that somebody else to me was my alcohol use. And I couldn't put it down. And I heard her say over and over again that if you continue to drink, I'm leaving. If you continue to drink, I'm leaving. And I just took it for granted until the one day that she actually left. And that was when my world really fell apart. I started drinking more and more, and the weekends turned into Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Monday. There was always a reason to drink on each of those days, and I ended up taking it too far, and was drinking, I don't know, every single day almost from dusk till dawn. It got so bad that one night while I was drinking, I got a phone call from my mom, and my dad was rushed to the hospital having a massive heart attack, and he was going to have open heart surgery that night. And instead of me going to the hospital like a son should do, I went to the bar instead to get drunk. I don't know if it was the nervousness or what, but I let alcohol take me away from that moment in my dad's life where he needed me there, and I wasn't a part of it. When I finally went to the hospital that day and I saw the look on my mom's face of I don't even know if it's disappointment, but maybe even disgust at that point, that I wasn't there to support, you know, my dad's only, I'm his only son, so to be there for him. And just kind of that when my dad finally came to and talking to him, and he was just kind of looking at me like, found out that I wasn't there for him. And it was just almost like your heart's breaking inside, just knowing that, you know, I chose something so terrible over the people that I love most in this world. Coming to Teen Challenge, I could start feeling that God was here. And I think what changed in my recovery too is that I was starting to give everything away to God that I was holding on to. All the old ways of myself, the selfishness, the reservations to drink again, they were all kind of going out the window the further along I got in the program. With God on your side, it's kind of like you can do all the things that you never thought you could before. I mean, I've been scared always in the past, and now I'm finally, there's no reservations anymore. I'm finally getting set free, and I can feel it every day. That want to go drink is no longer in my head anymore, and it's a freedom I've never felt before, honestly. And I mean, I owe that all to God, because I don't know how else I would have gotten there. I'm not perfect. I don't run a perfect program, but I can tell you what, with Jesus on my side, there's no other program that I need to run.
George, that's another amazing story. And to think that, you know, Dad's maybe in a life and death situation and he couldn't bring himself to go be with his father, that says a lot about the power of just alcohol and trying to avoid.
Well, what happens is it becomes your God and you serve your addiction. And so everything else doesn't relate. It can't compare to the desire to keep using, and it changes who you are. You become somebody that just uses, and people don't matter to you. You don't matter to yourself. Mm-hmm. And it's really ugly and it's painful. The only way any good can come out of that is if Christ enters it. And they're painful to hear these stories, but on the other end, we hear hope and salvation. And, you know, people get raised from a deadly existence to hope and love and restoration. And only Christ can do that. So no matter how far down the scale you've gone, your experience can help other people. And you can do anything for one day. You got to make the decision, though, to do it. And if you're listening tonight and you can relate to these stories, and that's your life right now, is their past, your life can be their present reality of one of hope and recovery, forgiveness. And at a certain level, Bill, we will do anything. We're like the man in the Bible that discovers the truth, and whatever he has, he pays it to get it. You know, the story of Christ. Well, that's what you do. And how you pay for it is you call Teen Challenge and you sign up and you go in. Mm-hmm. Because God does work. And if you're thinking, I don't want to do this, I can't do this, you're right on both counts. But it's not up to you.
Yeah, so true.
The person you are right now uses. But God can transform you into a person who doesn't use.
Yeah. Well, George, we're out of time, so make sure you say hi on the air right now to Alex.
Hey, Alex, I forgive you for blowing us off for the Bruce Springsteen concert that time and a couple others for All-Star Wrestling. You did a good job, buddy.
So it got personal. That wraps up another award-winning episode of Real Recovery. Thanks again to our friend Alex over at Minnesota Adult and Teen Challenge for the great testimonies he shared with us tonight. And that is all for now. We'll see you next week. Have a great week, and we'll be back next Sunday. And so I have to say before I go. Thanks for listening. Programming like this is made available through your support. Information available at myfaithradio.com.